The Peace and Liberty Podcast, Episode 8. Hey everyone, Stephen Clyde here on day 3 of our full week regarding women and libertarianism. Today I'm speaking with my good friend Sherry Clark, and if you want to find her on Facebook, she goes by Sherry Voluntary. She is the host of a radio show called Speaking Freely on WETR 92.3 FM and 760 AM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Me and her actually met at the Tom Woods 1000th episode event, which, by the way, it was the greatest time ever. Can't express that enough, but I met hundreds of people there, and one day was really simply not enough. And funny enough, Sherry, I remember we were all sitting out in the patio by the pool, and I think you stayed with us till at least like 3 or 4 a.m., but I remember I didn't go to bed till like 7, 8 a.m. Just the conversations just kept going and going. But, yeah, what a blast. But you were recently on the Tom Woods Show, which is awesome. I'm glad you got on. And I'll link to that as well. But you had amazing feedback for that video. If you go look at the comments, like people are really wanted to hear that message. But see, there's this myth that libertarianism is a white male movement. And while statistically that may be true, that doesn't mean liberty is only for white males. Come on, that's ridiculous. It's the exact opposite. Libertarians, well, true libertarians, judge others in terms of character and what an individual has to offer. That's why you constantly hear them talk about individuals and individualism. But it's really leftists that are desperate to put people in groups, the endless identity politics. We could go on and on, but we'll try to sort some of that out in our discussion. But Sherry, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you face to face again.
Yeah. It's good seeing you again. I guess first off, tell us a little about you, your political background, how you came to libertarianism. Let's hear it.
Well, I was pretty much a neocon for most of my young adult life. I've always been sort of a hippie artsy type, but when it came to my politics, I was super conservative. Then I moved to Tennessee. I'm from Tennessee, but I had moved back about 15 years ago. And I started hearing Neil Bortz out of Atlanta. He was a libertarian.
How do you spell that name?
I think it's Bortz. And he wrote the Fair Tax book.
Okay. Yeah, we'll link to that.
Yeah. And so I heard that on his show. And I also heard about eminent domain. And, you know, that was what really got me started thinking about the government and, you know, the state, its place in our lives. And from there, and also before that, the Patriot Act sort of had woken me up a little bit. It was a bit scary, but then I was just able to kind of lull myself back to sleep. Well, this is what we have to do because we have to stay safe. Right. So that's how I came to a libertarianism anyways. Although I was never a part of the party before the last like 8 months, but I was more of a person who called themselves a libertarian, but I had no idea there was a philosophy for a long time.
That specifically is why I wanted to start the show, because I talked to so many libertarians and they've never read Rothbard, they've never read anything. And they still have of these vociferous opinions, kind of like we do, but with knowledge. But it's crazy. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're a libertarian or a leftist or a conservative. Like, generally, most people involved in politics don't do their homework, which makes it easy to get involved in politics and, you know, make a difference. But yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's easy to come to libertarianism or the Libertarian Party anyways with that same sort of party mentality of these are my guys and think about only issues. But the beauty of libertarianism from philosophy is that it really gives you a foundation that can inform your morality. And so issues don't matter so much. You know, you can just, I can hear just about any issue and pretty much know right off the bat where I'm going to fall on that for the most part. I mean, there's always some nuance with things, but, you know, for most issues, it's pretty simple.
It's funny. Ayn Rand is known for hating libertarians because she thought their philosophy didn't have a moral starting point. When I think it's the exact opposite. I think the non-aggression principle and the idea that people have negative rights, that's the axiom libertarians start on. I mean, that is a moral philosophy. So I think Ayn Rand kind of got it wrong there. But
yeah, I would say, you know, just to kind of go off a little bit here. I'm maybe off track a little, but
please do.
The non-aggression principle, as beautiful as it is, I mean, it's basically the golden rule, right? I mean, that's pretty much similar. And as wonderful as it is, I think sometimes people kind of think that's all there is. Like, well, there's the non-aggression principle and that's it. And that it's like the end of morality. But for me, it's kind of the beginning of morality. It's like the foundation that you lay and then everything on top of that. So
I can agree with that. I can definitely agree with that. I mean, there's definitely way more to libertarian than just the non-aggression principle, but it's like, where does your philosophy start from? And I think libertarianism starts from a sound starting point versus everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, the fact that it starts with you really as your own personal property, you know, that you are. And I know I've talked with people who don't like that idea of self-ownership.
They call it a contradiction. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, they say it's slavery. And I'm thinking, well, if you don't own you, then who does? Like somebody has to own you basically. You have agency, right? And you can act on your behalf. So that means that you own yourself. If you don't own yourself, then I don't know what they think you are. Like, I don't get that.
Yeah, no, it reminds me of Rene Descartes. I mean, he's had that famous quote, "I think, therefore I am." Well, that was a stark realization, because if you read Descartes, he was a very, very troubled person. I mean, he didn't really want to concede that there's any truths at all. And his only truth he could conceive of was that "I think, therefore I am." So the idea that we're in control of our own thoughts and our own behaviors, I think that's a pretty good sign that we're all individuals and that we're all different and idiosyncratic with our views and our perspectives. And, you know, it's Murray Rothbard that really said you have to be free to be able to be an individual. It can't be the opposite. So, yeah, we're having a great conversation already. I knew we would.
Yeah, I was just interviewing Anthony Samaroff today, which I know you just recently had on the program.
Yeah, my episode just came out today. Well, this is, we're recording this for a later date, but yeah, Anthony Samaroff was on episode 3 for me.
Yeah, he's great, and I can't think of it now. I'm trying. It's man is plagued by freedom, I think was one of the quotes he had in his book. It's something to that effect, and it's really true. People often, when we talk to them, you know, they'll say, well, you know, libertarian anarchism or libertarianism even is, you guys are idealists. You think it's going to be utopia. And that's not it at all. It's about agency. You know, it's about who has agency in your life. And, you know, I hope that people don't believe that we're going to end human suffering with a libertarian society.
You know, one thing Tom Wood pointed out on the show one time, and it made me think for just a really, really long time after he said it, he talked about how Murray Rothbard would think about this issue that, you know, should we be extremists and like only accept zero taxes versus any tax cuts? And that's not what Murray would say at all. Murray would say that, of course, accept any tax cut you can, but what is your ultimate goal?
Right.
Is your ultimate goal to end rape completely, or is it to, you know, end 9 out of 10 rapes?
Right.
The goal is obviously to end all rape. Just using that as another comparison. So the goal with taxation is to get to no taxation, but that doesn't mean you would be against any progress. So that's right. That's like the biggest misconception. It's just when Murray talks about, you know, getting rid of all government, he's talking about a moral principle that on principle, government doesn't have any resources of its own. Everything it has, it once took from somebody. And take is a very accurate word because it wasn't voluntarily given up.
Right. And there's two things that I think that brings up. One is that not to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. So yes. I love anarchism. I think it's a beautiful political philosophy. I think it's
a tendency though. It's a tendency. It's what direction are we headed? It's kind of like, you know, in economics, you never actually reach equilibrium. It's a tendency to get there. So if we can bring people to want to get rid of government, you know, that's going to be the tendency for the future. But obviously, it's the exact opposite. You know, people think we need government to do everything.
Right. I always tell my friends who are minarchists, I'll say, yeah, I would be perfectly happy in a minarchist society, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, they're so convinced that you need government, but I think, or the state, I think the closer you actually got to it, if you ever got close to it, you wouldn't need it. Like people, if you can do minarchism, you can definitely do anarchism.
So. Yeah. And relating back to what I just said earlier, the way I describe it with my minarchist friends is, look, we have about like a million billion laws in the books. If we can get down to three basic things the government does, you know, protect us from domestic violence, protect us from foreign disputes, and protect and enforce contracts, then we can talk. Then we can argue, do we need less than these three government functions? But until we get there, I don't know why anarchists argue so much. And it's just kind of an idealistic tendency. I think people just want to be right. Yeah. But I think in general, yeah, I think back in the day, I would have, as a new anarchist said, or just would have rejected any minarchist and call them a statist. I mean, you're generally not true. It's just, they have some misunderstandings. It's like, you got to help people understand, folks. If you just yell at somebody, well, guess what? they have even more of a reason not to like you and to call you crazy, and you're not satisfied because you didn't change their opinion. So, I mean, there's
just polarize them to their point of view. And I think it's important too. Gosh, there's so much there.
I did want to say,
I think people have this misunderstanding about the state and government, and you know that they're separate. That as an anarchist, I don't necessarily want to get rid of government. I do want to get rid of the state as it is, which is the force. You know, they come with guns and they make you do things. But governance, I think, is probably a better word. I want governance. Like, I want people to organize and figure out how their community should work. And that's really, that's the huge difference. And I know we use government and the state interchangeably a lot. And I think sometimes people get confused about that. And the other thing is that, I forget what I was going to say. all the time. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's great. But no, we've been talking a lot here. But I do want to get to, you know, you host a radio show, which I mentioned earlier. It's called Speaking Freely. I watch it all the time. I see you go live all the time. You guys have some great conversations. You play some awesome music we jam to. But tell me more about how you got into doing that, because obviously it's not something everyone ends up doing, like, you know, being a part of a radio show. I mean, what I'm doing is a very niche kind of field where I remember I put myself in a camera one day. I said, what would a podcast look like if I did it? And I recorded a video and it was just like, huh. And an idea just grew and grew and grew. And I'm an OCD person. If I want to do something, I do it right, you know. So how did you get into this? I'm really curious.
It honestly came from me getting involved in the Libertarian Party, which, you know, for what it's worth, I'm still not the craziest about the party in every aspect, but you know, for community, it's really great. And I love the people in the party, you know, and there's a lot of good talk, you know, I get to talk to people about libertarianism, which I love. So Justin Cornett, who is now my co-host, he is the regional coordinator around here, and he found me on the internet on Facebook, and he said, hey, let's have a beer and talk about you coming and joining the Libertarian Party. And I was like, no, thanks. I don't want to do that. You know, and honestly, it's been one of the best things that I probably ever did for myself.
And you could have never predicted it, right? Because I mean, what I was trying to get to is like, how did you become a radio host? I was going to ask before, did you ever do anything like that before? Or was this just totally something new to you?
No, you know, I've never done radio. When I was in school, I did like public speaking. I enjoyed, you know, forensics. I'm one of the rare extrovert anarchists, or, you know, libertarians. So many of them, you know, are introverts, and I'm pretty extroverted. So I always enjoyed doing speech competitions and things like that. That was, you know, a long time ago, and in a group I was involved with before I did teaching sometimes, but that was never, it's radio is kind of a different animal.
But I can imagine.
Yeah. And joining, you know, getting involved with the Libertarian Party, and then the city, Knox County, sorry, coordinator, Josh Eckel, called me one day and said, hey, you want to do a radio show with us? And so that's how we got going. And it started out, he and myself and Alexander Shaw, we started doing it together, and they work full-time jobs as well. I'm home with my kids. So it's a little easier for me to kind of be in that more. So they've kind of had to back away somewhat, but they're still on the show sometimes. And then Justin Cornett is my co-host and we have a good time, but it's, I just want to encourage everyone to take opportunities, you know, take opportunities when you think, sometimes just go for it. And it's changed my life, really.
Sherry, I could have never, ever imagined in a million years that I would be doing something like this, that I'd be writing two books, that I'd have thousands of people that I know that I can talk to and reach out to. My life completely turned around in about like a year, 2 years, because I got out of a really bad relationship, you know, same old ordeal most people go through, you have a hard time in your life. And I really had to pull myself out of that. And I could have never imagined that this is where I ended up. And it's just funny how life is sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And that's the thing, I think everything you do prepares you for the next thing. So that's why it's so important to put yourself all the way into whatever you're doing, because you're developing skills, because you don't know what's going to come down the pipe. And, you know, like I said, my life has changed a lot in the last few months. I knew I wanted to do something for the cause, you know, but I wasn't sure what. So getting involved with the party kind of made sense for me. And just to talk to other libertarians, because I had met so many that had, like we said, no idea about Rothbard or any other philosopher, you know, even more recent ones like Tom Woods or Jeffrey Tucker or any of those people, they had no idea. And so I wanted to kind of reach out to them, because I thought, well, if I can make some libertarians more, you know, big L libertarians, more small L libertarian, then we all win, right? Because they're already identifying as something. So your tendency when you identify as something is going to be to kind of go more that way. If you're told, well, that's not a very, you know, that's not a very libertarian idea. Can you explain it? And they have to kind of figure it out. So,
yeah, I think as an anarchist, you have to be careful, because first off, just saying the word anarchy is kind of, I was talking with Dan Elwood and he hosts Actual Anarchy, and anarchy just has kind of a stink to it. And so I told Dan, like, I'm going to try to be a path to him, and I'm going to send more people to Actual Anarchy, but you really got to figure out where people are. If they have the complete opposite views of them, like, still see if you can work with them. I've converted so many leftists, you know, you turn them on to one good article, and if they're open-minded and they actually read it, they'll be like, wow, that's all it really takes.
That's the thing with, you know, people on the left, their foundation, you talked about The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt. I love that book. And one of the moral foundations for the left is care. And so they care about things. And it's if you can convert that into caring about the right or the issues in the right way, man, you've got a real asset. And I think that's really important to recognize, is that if you're reaching out to be right, you're not going to convince people, and you're actually hurting yourself. But if you reach out to help people, and to also be open to learn, because there's plenty we can learn from people on the left and the right. You know, we're a different animal. We don't have to, you know, we're not in the middle. I hate that, but we don't have to like take sides. We can just take what's best. And
I try to be apolitical when I first talk to people, even if they're talking about something political. I try to find one piece of common ground that we can, whether it's anti-war or maybe we're against big, maybe we're against corporatism, you know, crony capitalism. Just find like one common ground point where you can get them to like you. And when they start to like you, they're going to start to listen to you. But the first thing you say to them is, I think leftists have a mental disorder, or you could say just blank enter here, but you know, people aren't going to listen to you anymore. They're going to think you're a jerk. They're going to think, wow, whatever this guy believes in must be a pretty mean philosophy.
Yeah.
And
I think that's because libertarianism is like, libertarians tend to have high IQs. They tend to be more introverted, things like that. And I think sometimes they can come across that way.
Sure.
And so I think that's why that's really important. And we have to remember that we don't have to wear our libertarianism on their sleeve, like on our sleeve. There's more to life than libertarianism, right? We, as much as we love it, and I know we're passionate about it, we need to find different avenues to enjoy in life, to meet people, and to just live our lives and let them see that we're regular people, and talk to them like regular people. And
Facebook can be a black hole if you let it be in your life.
Yes.
Well, obviously I mentioned earlier, well, I'm going to mention again, we're doing a woman in libertarianism this week. And obviously you can see Sherry does quite a bit, but obviously the stereotype about how liberty is only for white males, how would you respond to that?
Wow. I think every human longs to be free. So I would imagine that it's not just white males, you know, that want to be free.
How about that?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I've had conversations with friends, and I've probably even said it myself before, is that, you know, people don't really want liberty. They don't really want to be free. And in a way it seems like that sometimes, but I think it's that they don't know what it is. They don't know what freedom really is, because we have to remember, people are victims of this indoctrination machine called the state. And they go to state schools and they state media, basically. And so, you know, we're fighting a really, really tough battle, and we have to be compassionate with people. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's kind of fun to troll people. You know, I get that. I'm not above the occasional bad comment, but
yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know, I'm a human.
If I miss my coffee, you might see an angry comment on Facebook, but yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. It just, the stereotype especially is that if you're a woman, you're in no position to make a change because, well, if it's male dominated and men are more powerful, then women can't make a change. But I totally disagree. I think there's a lot of great women out there doing great things in libertarianism. Oh, yeah. And I have a full week of them. I have Dr. Mary Ruhr, excuse me, I mispronounced the name, Dr. Mary Ruhr coming on this week. Yeah. And she's done so much. I'm sure you've read Healing Our World, and she has a new book coming out called Death by Regulation, which we're going to promote in that show. But yeah, it's there's so many things you could say about everyone in the movement doing many different things.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree. Dr. Ruhrt is, she's amazing. And I haven't read Healing Our World, but it's on my list. It's like one of the books that's on the top of my list to read, because as I've asked around, many people say it is the best introductory book to libertarianism ever. Like that's a lot of people's top number one book.
It's exactly what we were talking about earlier, that, you know, when you take leftists who they are truly caring, compassionate, well, that's exactly the premise of Healing Our World, is that, you know, libertarianism is compassion, but it's compassion for people in a voluntary way and actually giving way. And part of the reason we can't be as charitable as we want to is because the state steals a lot from us. If about 30% of our paychecks are paid in by taxes, that's working from January 1st to like mid-April for the government.
That's crazy. I know. And it is, I wish more people would write their tax check, you know, and not get the return and have to see how much of their payment is going, or their labor is going to the government, to the state. Yeah, I think that women, you know, can offer a lot, to get back to what we were talking about, that women often, I think, feel like politics is just a big fight. And so we got a lot to do. You know, I mean, I know men do a lot too. I'm not saying that, but you know, women tend to have a lot on their plate. I think sometimes we have a tendency to overdo it because we care about our families, we care about our kids, and we want the best for them. So we overextend ourselves, and, you know, we're tired, and we got a lot going on, and it just seems like one more thing to fight about. And I think that
I never thought about it that way, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I get that way sometimes. I'm just like, ugh, you know, one more thing. But
no political discussion today, please.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a little different than most women. I really am interested in politics, but I think it's just a matter of helping women to see how it really can improve people's lives, and that we have to make it personal for women. Like, they just have to understand that economics is how life works. And if you can make that connection for women, I think you're so much more, there's so much more involvement from them. And just that, you know, women, we are more emotional creatures, I would say, for the most part. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of missing in libertarianism. Like we talked about, it's male dominated. Jonathan Haidt says it's the most male of the political philosophies. It's very reasoned, very logical, but it can seem very cold. And women can bring that kind of warmth back to it, because there is that component where, yes, we're individuals, and yes, we have agency in our own lives, or we should have agency in our own lives, but we are humans as well who need communities. Families are wonderful, you know? And so I think that we can kind of help add in that component and have that good balance of logic and emotion, because they're both important. So I think a lot of men, especially in the liberty movement, they really care about what women think. And I think men kind of get blamed unfairly a lot of times for why there aren't more women in the movement. And I just think it's that we've not branded things very well sometimes, that and maybe we needed to do that. Maybe the liberty movement just needed to establish those hard facts and then move forth from there. But in the beginning of the liberty movement too, we have a lot of amazing anarchist women that were writing. I can't remember, Wilder was her last name, Rose Wilder or something. She was the Little House on the Prairie writer's daughter. And she was an amazing libertarian.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. She, she basically put a lot of the men to shame that were in the beginning.
Well, I tell you what, I'll put something in the show notes. I'll put something for the links. I'll add that to the links.
I wish I could remember her name. It drives me crazy. But there have been women who've been very prominent. And I don't know why it clicks for some of us easier than others. I have an idea, but, you know, it does. And I think it just is going to take a little bit more work to get more women on board. But I think the more women we get on board, the easier it's going to be. So I'm really proud of the men in libertarianism in a lot of ways, that I think they really do care and they really want women to come on board.
Absolutely.
But just bridging that gap, I think, is going to be a huge thing for us.
I guess how I wanted to end this, and I'm going to ask this question to all my guests this week, and If it comes out good, I want to hopefully splice it all together and make a video later. It'll come out really cool. But the question is this: what would you personally say to someone that said, libertarianism is male dominated and there's nothing women can do for it?
Wow.
And be harsh. This is a time for you to be harsh against someone that said that to you.
Sure. I agree. It is male dominated. And I think that, I don't think there's a reason for that as far as any kind of design by anyone to keep women marginalized or something. But I think it's just a matter of branding. And I think that, individual rights are a very justice-oriented thing, very, you know, solid and can be kind of cold logic. But I think that women, if we just brand things a little differently, I think we can bring women into it. And I think that, we don't want to bludgeon people. And I think women feel bludgeoned sometimes by men and their desire to teach us, you know. And I know men don't like to be nagged, and I don't like to be told what to do. I think a lot of women might be like that, but I especially don't like to be told what to do. So sometimes I'm a little resistant to that. I just think that if we reach out to people with a little more tolerance for where they're at, and, you know, don't, I think for men, one of the biggest maybe tips that I would give is, don't blame a woman for feeling about a situation, saying, I feel this way. And even if she's wrong, it's okay to have feelings. And those feelings can be properly put in context with the right teaching. But you have to be an evangelist before you're a teacher, right? So you have to kind [S2] Yes. [S1] Of draw the emotions. And I think people, and I know I've done this before too, sometimes we're trying so hard to win this argument in this conversation that we really hurt our chances for having the next conversation. And that's what we really always should be thinking about, is having that next conversation. So we want to establish a credibility with people by making it okay and a safe for them to come talk to us. We're not going to just yell, you know, call them a statist and tell them they're violent and, you know, you want to put, you know, violence against me.
Oh, I always stress when I'm talking to somebody, it's like, I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking the ideas.
Yeah.
I think it's the ideology that's violent. I've never claimed that anyone went out and did something. It has nothing to do with that. Yeah. But keep going.
And they may, you know, there are times like the draft, for instance, had conversations just recently about that. And, you know, their emotions are very tied into it. And we have this sort of civil religion that's sort of tied in with it. But if you can just live with their anger and live with maybe their insults to you for a little bit and show them compassion, but keep to the principles, a lot of times they will come around to that because it goes against freedom. Like people who claim to love freedom, you know, they have these ideas of, you know, that they determine their own lives and all those things and that they want freedom. So when you can kind of put back to them, well, how is that freedom? You know, don't be surprised when people hate you or are mad at you because of these things, because they've had a lot of indoctrination on them and you can kind of feel sorry for them. I used to be that person, so I get that. And I think, like, I don't know if you've ever seen it. There's this picture of this older lady. And I think it's somewhere in Europe. And there's this line of police. And they've got their shields, their riot gear on, and helmets with the mask down. So they don't look like humans anymore. And this older lady is standing there. And she's holding a mirror to them. And that is such a powerful picture for me. Because, you know, people... you're able to do a lot to another person behind a mask. And, it really, she's showing them, this is what you look like and kind of reflecting that image back to them. And that's what I think we really want to do is we don't have to really fight with people when they say things. We ask them how, you know, I thought you believed in freedom. How is that freedom? You know, how is it okay to do this or that? So I really think we can make a lot of progress with people by just letting them make the statements and then countering it. You know, we don't have to make making needless enemies shoots us in the foot. You know, you don't want to do that to yourselves. You don't want to do that to the liberty movement. The goal is to get more people involved, not to be right. And I think sometimes, you know, I like to be right. So it's just learning to fight fair.
I totally agree. I think we definitely have the same mindset regarding how to bring people on board versus shunning people away. And obviously, I'm going to say this now, you guys should support the Mises Caucus. Got Joshua Smith and Michael Heiss, and they're both doing such great work. Support the Mises Caucus, you know, get Sawwork out and, you know, maybe get some real libertarians in there. But in the meantime, let's try to convert as many people as we can. Be nice. You know, you use facts. I mean, when I talk to people, I try to use very little emotional aspects and I just throw out facts after fact after fact. And that seems to work better than yelling at somebody. But Sherry, it's been so great having you on. And where can we find you? Where can we see your radio show and all that stuff?
If you go, I should know this by now. I keep forgetting it. It's, if you go to 92.3 Knoxville, the station will come up. And there's a little app in the corner you can download and listen from anywhere in the world, anytime, but it's live when we're on air on 6:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am on Facebook. We have Speaking Freely show page, and I have my Sherry Voluntary page. I'm on Twitter as well. I'm in the midst of developing my website, so and stay tuned for that.
you know, me too. I'm actually in the process of developing a website and I wanted to start my podcast so urgently that I just went ahead and skipped past it. But you know, I'll eventually go back and update the website. So I'll link to both Speaking Freely and you on Facebook so people can find you, reach out to you. You have a lot of great ideas. Is there one thing you wanted to add?
SoundCloud too. We're on SoundCloud. I think we just got on Stitcher and things like that. So,
all right, you got it. Well, thank you so much, Sherry. We got another great guest coming on for you tomorrow. And this, again, this is Week A Woman in Libertarianism. So we'll see you all tomorrow. Hey, everyone. Please like, follow, donate, subscribe, and share. Any donations will be used to reach more people.